Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Hello, welcome to another Confessions podcast. One of your favourite podcast. In fact, let's say it's your favourite podcast of the week.
Let's just say that, yeah.
When it arrives in your inbox, you go, hurrah, my week is now perfect and I can enjoy half an hour. How long do you think?
Oh, no, it's more like 45 minutes, 50 minutes, actually.
50 minutes of incredible entertainment brought to you by your friends at Greatest Hits Radio. Sister Holly, as you can tell, is here to cast judgment, as
absolutely.
She does.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Brother Matthew in the gutter, morals correct. Of an alley cat. And we're going to visit the parish notice board later and add to the list of shame those confessions which were not suitable for a family broadcast show. We go back to a 1960s boarding school in Grabber's Tale from the Crypt. Grabber makes quite a few appearances in confessions over the years. And you'll also get to hear this week's confessions from the show. I mean, obviously, it would be great if you could actually be bothered to listen live. We're on 4 till 7, Monday to Friday. But hey, this is your catch-up service. So the confessions this week include a health and safety warning in Smudger's glow stick catastrophe in Things Are Never Quite the Way They Seem, Dan's spiral of lies in Run, Rabbit, Run, 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 Andrew's confession, the boogie-woogie bugle boy. But first, another Andy's shameful social networking in Happy Loving Couples.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession, which comes from Andy, brackets, not my real name. To be honest, they're never real names as far as we know. This is a slightly unusual one, I think. Father Simon and the Holy Collective, let me take you back to the year 1987. I just finished school. My uncle was the area manager of a well-known butcher's chain, and he got me my first job. As a trainee butcher, I had my own apron and everything.
Great.
The word everything is working, but I'm not quite. And meat cleaver?
Yeah.
The shop I was working in was 6 miles away from home, and I had to cycle there and back in all weathers. The softies had cars and buses, and I would have loved to have been one of them, but no. Rain or shine, and wind from all directions.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what wind does.
Yeah.
I struggled to work on my less than fancy, pretty basic and standard issue bicycle. No gears, one brake and a wonky saddle. So for the first month or so, I got more and more fed up. That was until I spotted a girl. And the girl just started working in the newsagents next door. We're going to call her Sharon. Father Simon, it was love at first sight. She was the one for me. She was an absolute stunner. A right Bobby Dazzler. As they used to say.
A very, very long time ago.
In the Victorian ages. Yeah. I had genuinely never seen anyone quite so beautiful. I was transfixed. Every time she smiled at me, my heart literally skipped a beat. A toss of her fabulous hair and I was a puddle. And her smell was heaven sent.
Scent? Very good.
I think that was written deliberately for you.
Yeah, loved it.
I'm hoping your listeners may well remember their first love and the effect that it had on them. Well, I was a classic example, a lost cause, but it seemed as though she was up for the challenge. We held hands, we kissed, started dating, we went on holidays together. I was in heaven. I moved in with her as her house was in the town that we worked in. Right, so
it's, that was it.
That was the only
reason. So it clipped to there.
Didn't
have to cycle.
Where's your house?
All right. We could walk there from her house. The horrible bike ride was a thing of the past. Goodbye, rain. Farewell, annoying winds. Hello, seatbelt and closed windows. Okay. I could put all my energies into my exciting new relationship. Well, everything went well. After 6 years of being together, so we're fast forwarding.
We have a little, haven't we?
6 years of being together, it was real love. We got engaged, took a while, and we were planning our wedding. This was a slow process, you're absolutely right. And 2 years later... We were still planning, but I had a different job. However, one day I came home from work and Sharon said to me, perhaps we should just assume she sounds like all the women in Monty Python. She says to me, it's over, I can't go on anymore. That's it, I'm out of here. So long, Andy. And with that, she was gone. Father Simon, I was heartbroken, hurt, angry, but most of all, I wanted revenge, in capital letters. I'm not proud of this, of course, and I wouldn't recommend it as an emotion to your listeners. It can eat away at you, and I fumed for quite a while. However, after a time, I moved on, and then I found out that she'd moved on because she'd got married. I wasn't happy. I saw red. So you hadn't actually moved on at all, really. Now, in 2001, I was new to the online world, and I had heard of a fantastic new website where you could find old friends and get reunited.
Oh, that one.
I forget its name.
Yeah.
I looked up Sharon, and there it was in her profile. Happily married. Well, I wasn't happy to see this, so somehow I guessed her login details straight away.
What?
I changed the word happily to unhappily. So it now read, unhappily married. Father Simon, I had my revenge at last and I was happy. I slept better, I smiled more, I started going to the gym and ate more fruit.
Me.
I was happy. Holly or Susie or Katie will scoff, but I felt justice had been served. I'm not sure I come out of this very well.
No, you don't.
But let me finish my confession before you all rush to judge me. Fast forward 18 years and via Facebook, so this is a bit of an epic sweep.
Yeah, there is.
Sharon contacted me. We were both single. We met up, we fell in love again, and Sharon asked me if I had hacked her account all those years back. I couldn't say yes until now. And the punchline, we have now been married for 3 years and I'm sure I'll be forgiven for my crime of revenge.
Will you?
Well, I don't know. Father Simon, I seek forgiveness from my wife and her then husband. So, an epic sweep of family breakup. Damn. And also computer hacking, which, of course, we don't condone.
No, we don't condone that.
Sick and wrong.
Don't.
Sisters Holly.
Yeah, well, hacking someone's account is never good, really, allowed. Also, I feel like you started off this marriage on a bed of lies. You know, you could have actually come clean. She even gave you the opportunity to come clean, and you didn't, which is very poor. Also, I don't understand how people can be married with someone for so long and not come out with these kind of secrets. Maybe I'm just very bad at keeping secrets, but I just feel like this is very, very bad, very poor behaviour. I know it was a happy ending, but still not good, so not forgiving at all.
Brother Matthew.
Andy has very much been playing the long game here by, clearly having a relationship with her. And it all ends, and then we get back together. And did I hack your account? Yes, I probably did, but I'm not going to tell you until I tell you on national radio. That's how I'm going to tell you that I hacked your account. The butcher's story went nowhere at all, did it? No, he was involved in the butcher's, and then he wasn't. So I'm going to forgive. Just I don't know why I'm forgiving. There's nothing at all redeeming about this at all. I've got to be honest. I don't really see much future in your relationship together, given the past. I'm just going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
They were very harsh words.
They were, I mean, but fair. I think you'll find.
Though there is a PS to this story, Andy did get in touch after the confession.
Oh, right.
To let us know that his wife has forgiven him. So there is a future in their relationship. He's also requested that the smart speaker be addressed to her.
Oh, right, yeah, there's a bit of quid pro quo
Another
going on.
Another way of getting into good books, I suspect. Anyway, so thank you very much indeed. And if your confession is read out, and if there is a PS, obviously get in touch and update us. Over to the parish notice board. Matt, what do you think people are making of us this week?
Well, they're only leaving us 5-star reviews, or at least those are the only reviews that we're interested in reading out. So Ali and Betty have been on. 5 stars, they say. Amazing podcast and show. I've been listening since the early mornings and now on at a more sociable time. I've always loved the confessions and now listen to them whilst walking Betty my cockapoo and get funny looks when I laugh out loud. The best part is Simon's amazing catalogue of accents and Matt's infectious laugh. Keep up the great work, team. I would give you more stars if I could. Here's hoping I get a mention. There's your mention. Alison in Codnor. Let's say that.
Let's assume that Holly's typing is 100% accurate, and it's Alison Codnor.
Codnor. Lovely place this time of year. Sunil Manazi says, 5 stars, thanks for coming back. 5-star review all the way. The Confessions podcast has become an integral part of my life and something I look forward to every week. I started listening to your show at the other place whilst I lived in the UK. 10 years ago, I moved to Saudi Arabia, and your show adds the extra sunshine in an already hot place. Continue spreading laughter and joy.
Can I just say, Codnor obviously, famously, a village and civil parish in the Amber Valley district of Derbyshire.
Derbyshire, of course.
There you go.
I was thinking of Condor, the...
pipe tobacco.
3 days of the... Tortoiseshell 2006 says... The five stars.
Definitely a bot.
Definitely a bot.
Essential listening. This podcast is so good that now I have to turn off the radio for 10 minutes during the weekdays when the confessions are on so that I can listen to them all in a shiny gift wrap podcast on Friday evening. I would love to hear a confession that aired in a different parish, probably around 15 years ago. It involved a self-employed family man in Hertfordshire who permanently moved his whole family... That didn't actually exist. No, I did. So this is the one where he moved them to I think it was to the South Coast.
Yes.
Saying that he got a job interview, but there was no job there. He just wanted to live on the South Coast.
That is correct.
It was amazing. The confession took my breath away at the time, and I'm not sure that it would pass the stringent moral hoops that are demanded in the High Church of Greatest Hits Radio. Keep up the great work, says Carwin Tewin from Buryport in Carmarthenshire.
I think it would definitely... get on. I mean, it was a very shocking...
It was. I remember being genuinely taken aback that someone would move their family claiming that they were getting a job somewhere else and the job didn't exist. They just wanted to move house.
So they, he was going back to his old stomping ground where he grew up, and the only way he could think of moving was to lie to his kids and to his wife by saying, hey, I got this job. And they went, okay, great, let's move. He then had to go out and try and find a job.
He did eventually.
Yeah. But he lied through his teeth.
Yeah.
Lying to your family is just never a good idea.
Well,
really,
it might get you a confession.
It does. It's great fodder for us. Remember, in order to get a shout out on the pod, that we only accept 5-star reviews.
Now, we've had a request for some tat, and Holly, one of her many jobs is head of the tat cupboard. Mm-hmm. She has the keys. What have you got for us?
Yes, Sarah Payne has been in touch. She says, hello, Simon and the team. Please, can I have some tat from Holly in the cupboard? I like the fact that she thinks I just live there.
Yes.
Which I do. With the request that brother from the gutter, Matt, sign the tat, as I agree with his sewer-dwelling morals.
Quite right, good for you.
I can't wait for Fridays when the podcast is released, and always purposely take my 8-month-old son out for a drive so that we can listen to it. This is the second child I've raised on your hilarious podcasts. I did write in a confession involving said first child and a mishap with a tombola prize. Any tat would be great. Thank you. Keep up the fantastic work, Sarah.
Well, I think we should probably send her something. I don't remember the mishap with the tombola.
No, neither do I.
So send it in again.
Maybe it wasn't very good.
No, that is possible. However,
I'm assuming that it was a very good one, and we did read it out and made it a really entertaining feature. What's available for Sarah to have from the cupboard?
We've got some mugs. Postcards. Now, we've got postcards, but I don't think you've signed them yet, actually. So maybe it needs to be signed by you and Matt.
And Matt in this
all of
case.
Us.
In
why don't we all? We could all sign it, can't
a group
we?
Yeah, one, yeah, yes. Yeah,
yeah. All right. Sarah, thank you very much indeed. We'll send you something. If you want to drop us an email saying how much you love us, because we are quite needy, we might send you some tat. Email confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. A couple of mentions here. Michelle, Norman Kelly, Tracy Fry, Stephanie Ditt, Martin, Catherine Beek, and the Trooper. Amongst those who tweeted or blue skied, I don't think any threaded. The secret phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, still got the dings. Matt, can't remember why, but anyway, it made sense last week. Yeah. Matt will have a new one for you later on. Next, let's hear from the roll call of shame. Those confessions that have been screwed up and thrown into the recycling bin with the words in block capitals, "Not for broadcast," stamped by Holly in very angry words.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Red.
Sick and wrong. Mm-hmm. First one from James. James, no one needs to know. You can't laugh because it might be sad and tragic.
Oh, right, okay. And then I will feel awful, won't I? Yeah. Let's find out if it is sad and tragic.
James, no one needs to know about how you joined the Mile High Club in the lavatory on your American Airlines flight from Vegas to Heathrow.
Oh, dear.
It's seedy.
Yeah, it is.
It's gross. It's illegal. It's sick.
And wrong.
Sick and wrong.
Also, how do two people even fit in the lavatory?
They're always pretty small, aren't they? Yeah. Maybe it's the business class one. I don't know. I don't know.
Think they're all this, I think
are
all
they
the
bigger
same.
In business?
Yeah, they are. The loos are bigger in business class. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They have a bath.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mini jacuzzi. Get the hot tub going.
Something like that. It's like another, it's another 10 grand.
It is, yes.
I'd like to fly to Spain. How much is it going to be? 200 quid. First class? £10,000.
£10,000 and your left arm.
Oh, but right, you get a jacuzzi right. with a member of staff to hose you down afterwards. Yeah. That kind of thing. And also, Marley Club stuff, no. Because if we read that out, it's just encouraging, that kind of thing.
It's also a bit humble braggy, isn't it? It's a bit sort of,
also,
look at me.
The chances are, that, you know, if you were sitting next to James or James's other half, they'd be unbearable.
I mean, flights with other people are unbearable.
Flights with other people?
Absolutely.
What do you
anyone
mean,
on that flight. Oh,
just need a private
children,
jet.
People who eat, anyone watching anything. Oh, they're all awful.
Anyone watching anything?
Watching anything.
What, on the TV that comes with the flight?
Because it comes with leaks
also,
out of the headphones.
Let me interrupt Samantha.
Do go on.
We have said this time and time again, Samantha. Any confession involving laxatives.
Oh, not the laxatives again.
Sneaking them into someone else's food. Is it just...
No, we're not doing it.
No, we're absolutely
no.
not.
No, no,
very
no.
nasty thing to do. And as soon as we see the word laxative in the bin.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm sort of even thinking Samantha doesn't even... We're just mentioning this now so that people know not to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Sick and wrong, definitely.
100%.
So the ones that did make the cut... here we go from this week. Smudgers, unacceptable army behaviour in Things Are Never Quite the Way They Seem.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Today's comes from Smudger. Smudger, thank you very much indeed. Bishop Simon and the collected reverends of empathy.
Oh.
It was the end years of the Cold War.
Oh, I like this.
I was in the British Army, but attached to the American Army, which was not uncommon at the time. During this period, this bit feels as though it's a little bit kind of suspect and a little bit spy, a little bit MI6.
Oh,
anyway,
good.
During this period, we used to move certain ammunitions in the air, think Oppenheimer, with ground units dotted along the route in case of incidents. Thankfully, there never were incidents, though naturally we were all suitably trained to a high standard.
Right.
Anyway, that's the kind of MI6 bit, who knows what's going on there. Anyway, we'd been working a few weeks with my American chums, including a personal favourite one. He was a mountain of a man, so you always felt safe when he was about. No, he wasn't camouflage. He was from Texas, so obviously he was known as Tex.
Yes.
My surname, Smith, so as tradition dictates, I was Smudge or Smudger. Working with Americans has its pros and cons, Father Simon. One of the pros was their kit. For example, they had glow sticks way before the ravers got hold of them.
Ooh.
And there was us British chaps with our battery-operated chunky torches. Very old-fashioned and they weren't even waterproof. I was on sentry duty one night with Tex, somewhere out on the German plains. Wherever they are.
German planes?
I looked up German planes, spelt P-L-A-I-N-S, and all I got was Messerschmitts.
Right.
Anyway, but it's not those kind of planes. It was a two-hour duty in a trench, and we were both supposed to remain vigilant throughout. So naturally, we did what everyone else did, I think, and we split it down the middle into 2 one-hour shifts. So one slept in situ while the other kept watch. I volunteered for the first shift, as I was wide awake, mostly because I'd drunk something else the Americans had, Red Bull, which we'd never heard of.
Yeah.
It also gave me the opportunity to investigate how these glow stick things work. So Tex made himself comfortable and drifted off to sleep. Now, as you know, glow sticks don't work until you snap them, and then they glow, a simple yet almost magical process. I needed to know more. I knew it had to be a simple chemical process, but my only memory of chemistry was getting a detention for locking Mrs. Fink in the photography darkroom. So there was only one thing for it. I had to open one up. I grabbed Tex's Gerber multi-tool, something else the Americans had over us. We were lucky if we had a foldable tin opener. Forces folk will remember those. So the process started. I made a small incision. The fluid inside started to seep out. So now I had to snap it to see how it worked. I snapped, it glowed, yes, But as I brought it closer to my face and continued the snapping action, it split completely, and an amount of the glow stick flew. Oh, I should say, don't try any of this.
Don't do this.
An amount of the glow stick fluid squirted into my eyes.
Oh no!
Oh bother! I thought, or words to that effect. Yeah. I could barely see and was in moderate pain. There was only one thing to do, and that was to wake Tex up.
Obviously.
As I could not see, I was flailing my arms around to try and get to where he was in his sleep, but I hadn't really thought this through. I looked as though I'd come from another planet. Some mad alien guy. We were trained to fight the communist threat, not a space invasion. So abruptly, awoken from his slumber in some state of confusion by a thing waving their arms about with pulsing, dripping, glowing green eyes, he did what anyone else who was suitably trained to a high standard would do. He punched me in the face. I fell to the floor. Take that, you, and here he used language from the Shaft movie and song, which I will leave to your listeners to fill in the gap. Space alien. Anyway, yep. It was then he realised what this daft British bloke had done, and he carried out the appropriate first aid, as I was in fact a daft Brit, not some kind of first generation Incredible Hulk or space invasion person. So who do I seek forgiveness from? Not from Tex. I dare say he had a moment when awoken by this zombie-esque beast, but he punched me really hard, for which he did actually apologise later. I expect he's probably emailed the equivalent of Greatest Hits Radio in Texas, telling the same tale, seeking for forgiveness. No, I seek forgiveness from Mrs. Fink. If I spent less time messing around in her lessons, she would have had more stress-free classroom time, and I might have understood how it worked, and I didn't need to open the glow stick up. And now I know it's a chemiluminescence reaction involving diphenyl oxalate and fluorescent dye solution, and also hydrogen peroxide solution.
Peroxide, yeah.
Invented in 1871. But you probably knew all that.
Yeah.
So Smudger seeks forgiveness for basically putting a glow stick into his eyes, which is obviously a stupid thing to do, and moderate pain. Yes, I would imagine there would be quite a lot of that. Sister Holly looking very disapproving, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, we all love a glow stick. Like, they are very, very cool, very funky. But cutting one open, that's obviously going to end in a disaster. Also, at the start, when he said that there was a two-hour duty and that two of them were there and one of them would sleep and the other one would watch, why don't you just stay awake for both hours? It's not that long
much.
A shift.
No.
And just the... as I say, going back to the cutting of the glow stick, bad idea, was never going to end well. So for pure stupidity reasons, not forgiving. At all.
Invented in 1971, not 1871, just
Yes. Napoleonic War. I am going to forgive. Unfortunately, the joys of glow sticks have passed me by. I've never really seen the fascination, but I can understand you'd want to know how the chemistry works of glow sticks, and which of us could want to push that boundary as far as he did. Well, none of us really, because it would have ended up with it all over your face. But he did the right thing, didn't he? Waking up Tex, who then punched him in the face, and we all learned a lesson about hydrogen peroxide. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
And diphenyl oxalate
and the
and
others.
Fluorescent dye solution.
In 1871.
1971.
In 1971. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah. Why did you mention the Napoleonic War?
Was that not in 1871?
No.
I'm pretty sure it was.
No.
I think we might need to...
1803.
To 1815. Jury's out, so it could have been... The jury very much split down the middle there.
Okay, let me just...
The Napoleonic War... Very much what you come to.
Holly, what does that say?
1803 to 1815, it says, yes. Or a series of conflicts.
Involving Napoleon.
Yeah.
Is there any reference to 1871?
No.
There isn't.
This is where you come for your Napoleonic War chat. No rest is history for us.
No.
True. Yeah.
Although it is very interesting that the War of 1812 was seen in the UK as part of the Napoleonic War.
Yes.
But no one else saw it like that.
1812, as in the canons? Is that 1812? You know this, Holly.
No, the 1812. War of, the War of 1812.
1812
not,
Overture.
Not the 1812 Overture.
Yes, that's the one with the canons.
That's all I know, yeah.
It is. The French. That's France versus Russia.
France versus Russia, 1812.
The War of 1812 is UK versus America.
In, isn't that the one in the movie? The,
I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah.
This is why we're not doing a history podcast.
I'm just telling you.
This is how they do it.
Still to come. On this here Confessions podcast, a Ouija board makes an appearance in the Confession from the Crypt. We're off on holiday to Portugal with Dan's tale, but not before Andy's tale, the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Andrew, thank you very much indeed for this. I should say, if you are amazing, that I should remember to say so before we start. If you're eating, there might be a couple of moments where you go, do you have to? But I do, so therefore I'm just telling you. Mm-hmm. Simon, Matt and the ever-forgiving Holly, I wish to confess my wrongdoings that actually led to me becoming a responsible leader. Taking you back to the turn of the decade, to the 80s, so quite a long time ago, I was an aspiring youth leader and enthusiastic Boys Brigade senior. The Boys Brigade Company, the BB Company, wanted all officers to learn the values of the brigade and to take on study that would provide them with council-approved leadership training, and so I was enrolled in a council social work weekend training camp. Sounds a lot of fun.
Okay.
I joined the camp early on a bright winter Saturday morning after being picked up in a council minibus, along with a group of others of varying ages, types and genders, as we snaked our way around pickups and off into the country to the camp location. The camp was held in a very remote location and an awe-inspiring mansion greeted us. The hexagonal central hall was amazing, with a shiny tiled floor and grand ornate furnishings. It led, we were told, to all the areas of the house and linked our activities for the weekend. We like to show you the grandeur of responsibility, as you will shine in your accountability and obligations as great leaders, our host declared, sounding disturbingly like an Archbishop of Canterbury. The host and course leaders, Father Simon, seemed very much like an easygoing bunch of hippies that were welcoming us as equals to the course. We were quickly orientated and got down to business with a packed agenda, taking us through the essentials of caring and responsibility. We learnt about presenting personal values, taking the lead, ownership of your actions, and moral fortitude, which is what this feature is all about. It was an intense and long day droning on about the limits and barriers of self-control that eventually led to dinner time and a well-deserved break. Well, we were tired and we were weary, and when we got to the great banqueting hall, a feast was set out to raise our spirits and we all ate heartily. At the end of the meal, the hippie host called on the course leaders to open the partitions, and they revealed another banquet, this time all alcohol and beverages. It was the largest collection of drink I'd ever seen. A veritable off-license. If Carlsberg made training courses, this would be it. Well, spirits of all... That's an old TV ad, by the way, Holly, just explaining. Spirits of all kinds were raised, and for the evening we were left to our own devices as the hippie horde retired and left us to it. Music was turned up and we started to party. I had never tried anything more than a shandy bass, Father Simon, and this was an amazing array of different bottles, cans and decanters to try. And so I did, because the course leaders had told me to.
Yeah.
A couple of hours into the session, my immature body started to complain, and I wasn't feeling as confident or steady about taking the drink, so I decided, rather than look like a newbie, I would sneak off to bed and hopefully the strange feelings would disappear. They never do. Without being noticed at all, I wandered off in the direction of the dormitories. I'd only just reached the central hall when I'm afraid to report, in the words of Cat Stevens, I couldn't keep it in. I had to let it out. And this being a tiled floor, I duly had to find a mop and clean everything up, taking responsibility for my actions, which is exactly what we were trained to do. But I did go unsteadily to bed. I slept the night in fitful discomfort, as I'm sure you might remember, Father Simon. No, I've never done that before. But awoke quite refreshed and eager to get food and get on with the day. The mansion seemed eerily quiet as I strolled down to the breakfast hall, and I wondered where everyone was as I enjoyed my pick of the buffet. As I finished, the course leader came into the room looking quite distressed and dishevelled. Ah, thank goodness you're here, he said. He then related to me some drama of the evening. Apparently there were some hijinks. by the revellers who had all been sent home, and there had been several accidents, two people with broken arms, one with a sprained ankle and a badly bruised tailbone. He went on to tell me that the group was so irresponsible that they had soaked the central hall and made it very slippery and unsafe, but no one could explain how that had happened. It was like an ice rink, he exclaimed, and a circus clown act with everyone falling all over the place. It was awash with water. No one could explain how this had come to be. I cannot remember such a disgraceful group, he said. The council will hear about this, and there will be action on all of those involved. I'll tell his reverence, is what he would have said if he was the verger from Dad's army. But thank goodness for you, this leader said to me. You listened and you learned the responsible attitude, and you will be getting my personal endorsement as a great future youth leader. The course was cut short and I was taken home by a taxi. I was the great responsible one, the future hope, the fine example, who'd only got there by creating mayhem and causing much injury. I had survived. The others had fallen away, quite literally. I'm hoping Matt will say something like, isn't that a lot like life? Whoever thought to show off their wealth by having a fancy, shiny tiled floor isn't laughing now, that kind of thing. I seek forgiveness after all this time from the group and hope that they weren't too set back by the experience of the weekend. I look back having become a brigade leader, an officer and section leader, although I never mentioned this to anyone, and now I feel that I need to get it off my conscience. So he took advantage of a chaotic weekend which he had caused and has lived off the glory ever since, Sister Holly.
Well, it was a recipe for disaster from the start. Drinking lots at a party, never a good idea.
No.
And so really, he shouldn't have done that. He got very excited with all the booze. He shouldn't have done it. And then being sick, I mean, it's just all very gross and rather embarrassing considering you're supposed to be a fantastic leader. That's not leadership behaviour. And so that's why I'm not forgiving at all.
Sick and wrong is definitely...
Sick and wrong, absolutely.
Yeah, I get it. Matthew.
Yeah. So this is going to be very easy to forgive. Number one, what are the course leaders doing laying on all that booze and then wondering why everything goes pear-shaped afterwards? Of course it's going to happen. You've given all these people booze and they've all go, oh, that's far too much. And then, and also the cardinal rule when walking across a tiled floor is the watch out for the fluids. Watch out for slippy bits over there. Everyone knows that rule 101 for walking across a tiled floor, we all know that, is don't slip up. So basically, it's everyone's fault but his. So definitely forgive and nothing to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession is Dan. Hello, Dan, and good evening to you. Father Simon and the Holy Collective, please keep me anonymous.
Okay, sorry.
I think I must have changed everything around, so it's fine.
And then,
Yeah, we changed it. It's all good.
Let's call him Anonymous Dan.
Let's do that. Yeah, okay.
I wish to confess something that I'm not proud of that happened over 30 years ago. The names have been changed and then changed again to protect the guilty, and the guilty is me. In the mid-90s, I started going out with a young lady, let's call her Mabel. Mabel was attractive, way out of my league, and to begin with, she was bubbly and carefree. However, over the months, she started developing a flaw. Let's say she was basically extremely jealous. She would always accuse me of looking at other women as we were walking down the street. She'd say, "Were you looking at her? You were looking at her, weren't you?" And, "Do you think she's more pretty than me?" "You do, don't you? You think she's more pretty than me?" Anyway, I wasn't interested in any of the other women, as I pride myself in being faithful and I would always deny any wrongdoing at all. And this was kind of cute and lovable to start with. However, as this was now happening every time we stepped out of the house, it started to get rather tiresome and worrisome, if that's a word. She didn't like me to spend any time with my friends, so I stopped seeing them to appease her and would spend most nights at her place or mine.
No, we all get it. Yeah.
One night, we watched the 1987 film Fatal Attraction.
Oh.
After the film ended, Mabel thought that Glenn Close was in the right all along, and they got the wrong ending.
Okay.
You remember Fatal Attraction.
Yes,
well,
I
you've
do.
Seen Fatal Attraction.
Yes,
Scorned Mistress and the Boiler of Pet Bunnies and so on. Well, now that sent alarm bells ringing, as I think it probably should. Yeah. And I decided enough was enough and felt that the end of the relationship had to happen. However, I was scared of what she would do to me if I broke up with her. I wasn't really keen on rabbit pie. So I came up with a cunning plan. My parents lived in Portugal, and I decided to go there for a three-week holiday. I didn't tell Mabel this, though. I told her that I'd been offered and accepted a job out there, and I would be staying there for at least 2 years.
I'm off for 2 years. Bye.
She accepted that I would be going, however, was determined to carry on with a long-term relationship. Maybe she could come out every other week. After some tears and an emotional farewell, she saw me off at the airport. See you soon. I then spent a lovely 3 weeks basking in the sunshine, finally being free of what I could and could not do. Unfortunately, a lot of my time was spent buying about 20 postcards and writing a fictitious account that Hollywood would have been proud of. I wrote things like, I miss you, I'm getting on with my life, the new job's hard work, and then after a few postcards, I would follow up with, I found someone else. I'll never forget you. Good luck with your life, and so on. I bought a load of stamps, cost me a small fortune. A small point. Yeah. And asked my parents to post them regularly, maybe every Monday, to Mabel to make sure that the cards were sent out in a specific order to keep the illusion going so she'd get the picture. I flew back to the UK after 3 weeks, finally young, free and single, and no hint of thumper pie anywhere. I started seeing my friends again. I went back to my UK job, and for about 8 weeks, everything was great, until everything went wrong in an instant. Mabel worked about half a mile from where I worked. However, she never came into my area, so I thought I was safe. However, on this occasion, Mabel decided to walk past, and looking through the office window, she saw me sitting at my desk. I saw her at the same time, but it was too late to duck or hide or run. My heart was pounding as she came marching in, demanded what was going on. I said, could I meet you after work? I'll explain everything. When we met up, I stated that I had decided on the spur of the moment to come back to the UK as my old firm desperately needed me as I was their top salesman. I wasn't, and they really weren't desperate. It was a flying visit. I'd be gone in a day. Oh, you're looking very well. Life is like a box of chocolates. There are more fishes in the sea. Love will set you free. Love hurts, and so on. I'm sure Matt would add circle of life, but really that doesn't fit in this case. No. She stated that she had just received a postcard from me saying that I was started to see someone else. I quickly had to think on my feet and I replied, yes, that was the case. I was on the rebound. I was torn between two lovers, feeling like a fool. No one else can have the part of me I gave to you. Fortunately, she didn't know the Mary McGregor song that I was quoting, which was very good.
Yeah.
She then said that she had started seeing someone. I pretended I was bitterly disappointed. I wish you well. Secretly, I was absolutely over the moon that I'd managed to dodge the problem of breaking up with her. I also had to phone my parents and tell them to stop sending the remainder of the postcards and to get rid of them. My fictional Hollywood screenplay was destroyed forever, although it cost a small fortune to ring Portugal.
As we've established.
There's a little theme coming here from Tight Dan. So, Father Simon, the collective, I wish to seek forgiveness from Mabel, who I understand has been happily married for quite a number of years. I also seek forgiveness from my parents, who are unwilling accomplices in my deception, and I await your verdict. Okay, well, that's Dan with a scary tale. Maybe people will relate to that. I'm not quite sure. A little bit fatal attraction in places. Mm. Sister Holly.
Well, it sounds like this wasn't the greatest relationship, really, and I'm glad that, you know, you were able to leave. However, this really wasn't done in the best possible way. I believe honesty is the best policy.
Do you?
And frankly, he could have just said to her, look, this isn't working out, and I think we should part ways. Instead of getting your parents involved, this whole story, going to Portugal, coming back from Portugal, she then sees you in the office. It's too long-winded, too complicated, and so for all those reasons, not forgiving at all.
Sick and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sick and wrong.
Brother Matthew.
Pretty toxic relationship, this one. But it wasn't exactly a foolproof plan, was it, to go to Portugal and then have all these postcards that would continue to be sent when you'd got home and you live half a mile from where she is and you don't think there's a chance you're going to run into each other. But, you know, it's not a crime to be thick. So, Dan, or whoever you are, you know, we're gonna forgive because, you know, love did find a way because Mabel ended up happily married. We don't know what happened to you, but hopefully you're fine.
Love will set him free.
Love will set you free.
Yes.
And for that reason, yes, because of the love setting free, I'm going to forgive.
Everybody who saw that film reacted in the same way, pretty much, apart from...
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've started to have more sympathy with the Glenn Close character, I've got to say.
Yes, say. Yes. Is that bad?
Yeah.
What, the bunny boiler?
Yeah. Leaping out of the bath with the old thing.
The old thing.
The old...
Ding dong.
With the ding dong, that's right. Yes, that's exactly it.
Right, so the slightly psychotic
woman.
Yeah, but he...
tried to kill the wife...
Does she try to kill the wife?
Yes, first.
Does she?
That's what he doesn't hear when he's downstairs rattling with the pans.
Oh, yes, it is.
He can't hear it. But,
okay.
Because you think you've got sympathy for her.
No, but I feel like not enough blame went on him.
Different way. Now you've changed your tune.
What about you, Michael Douglas?
But that isn't what our confessor. That isn't what the confessor's girlfriend said. She thought the ending was wrong. She had sympathy with Glenn Close.
With the pans.
When she says that the ending was wrong, what did she want at the end? What, the wife to die and she
presumably
skip into the distance?
That's why you need to get rid of all girlfriends and boyfriends who think things like that.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Just saying.
Okay.
Broad brushstrokes.
Yes, I thought so.
We also do relationship analysis here. So if you're going through
that
any
in history.
Problems, we can sort that out. Right, let's go for a wander down the marble stairs to the crypt. It is time to do that. This week's request comes from Michael, who says, Simon, Matt, Holly, Susie and the team, please can I request a confession from the crypt? It was from a few years ago. It involved school kids called Grabber and Gob, a knight called Sir Reginald, cream buns and a Ouija board. Sounds like I've been doing a lot of renaming.
Yes. Yeah.
It was absolutely hilarious and brought back great memories of me and my brothers playing with a Ouija board as kids in the 1970s, which we do not condone.
It's a very, very silly thing to do.
But anyway, for the purpose of this particular moment on the podcast, thank you, Michael. We appreciate your commitment to the cause, and here's the confession that I think you're talking about.
Something to confess.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's comes from Grabber. Simon, I need to ask for forgiveness. Given the nature of the incident, I think absolution from Sister Susie with her heavenly connections would be appropriate, as it may need some spiritual intervention. What are your heavenly connections?
I've no idea.
Okay. The incident happened in 1969 when my elder brother and I were sent to an all-boys grammar school as boarders. The school was a very old stone building with cloisters and a clock tower, looking like something from Tom Brown's school days. In the boarding house, a small separate wing, as boarders only numbered about 60 from a school of 500. There were two housemasters resident in the boarding house who took it in turns to be on duty. The rules for going out on a Saturday night were that at my age, which is 17, you could go out provided you signed a book stating where you were going and you'd be back by 11. My friend Gob and I had been invited to a party locally. Consequently, we went to see the housemaster to ask for special permission to stay out till 11. This housemaster was also head of classics at the school, fluent in Latin, Greek, was into archaeology, classical music. He smoked like a trooper and normally had a scotch on the go. These are our kind of teachers.
Truly.
He also had a penchant for fresh cream buns. Needless to say, his nickname was Cream Buns. And Cream Buns said I could go out and so could Gob go to this party. One of the fads in the 60s were Ouija boards.
Oh, yeah.
For the uninitiated, you remember those back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. For the uninitiated, you essentially turn a wine glass upside down on a table, mark out a few letters and numbers, and get a group of inebriated friends to put their finger on the wine glass, pretend there's a spook in the building, and, you know, with a bit of luck, a bit of pushing, the wine glass spells something out and you all go, ooh. Mm. Towards the end of the party, we tried this out, but without any success, surprisingly, and we left. However, despite our best intentions, we arrived back even after the 11 p.m. extension that Cream Buns had allowed us. We re-entered his study, expecting to be punished for being late. We decided to use the Ouija board as a novel excuse. We explained how brilliant the Ouija board had been, and we told a story of how we'd been in contact with the spirit of an ancient sea captain who only spoke Greek from the 17th century. Consequently, it was his fault that we were late leaving the party and not ourselves. Unbelievably, this excuse worked rather too well. Cream Buns completely forgot about us being late and questioned us about the Ouija board. He suggested that we join him for an experiment the following night to prove his skepticism theory. Well, unfortunately, I got a bit carried away with our new hero status for having stayed out so late. I happened to share our secret and our success with my brother, who is obviously known as Grabber Senior.
Okay.
Anyway, the following night, Gob and I arrived at a creaky old door which led to the old school library. This sits above the cloisters, and directly underneath the clock tower was the oldest part of the school and a bit creepy at the best of times. Here we set up the Ouija board on a round table with the upturned wine glass and various letters and numbers set out. Cream Buns then lit the candle and turned off all the lights. So this is the scene. It's midwinter. The room is freezing cold. It's pitch black, other than one candle. It's deathly quiet. We're sitting round the table. The hairs on my neck are definitely sticking up. Cream Buns then gets out his ancient book and starts reading aloud. Now, I was never much good at Latin, but even I realised that this wasn't normal Latin. And sure enough, Cream Buns was reading the ancient Latin text backwards. His explanation was a bit of backmasking, big in the 60s. According to legend, that by reading this backwards, it would rustle up any spirits who happened to be cruising around, and we could then get in contact with them. This would further prove his scepticism about the whole thing.
Right, okay.
Now, the wine glass, I have to report, did move, and it spelt out the name of a person who was a knight in the 16th century called Sir Reginald. At this point, an argument developed in our room as Cream Buns said this was all gibberish.
Oh, really?
And accused Gob of pushing the wine glass around the table.
Yeah.
Gob vehemently denied this. So to settle the argument, we agreed to get the spirit to give us a sign that he existed to settle the argument, because this is, of course, how it works.
Yeah, this is definitely how it works.
So we asked it, and then the wine glass stopped moving and a deadly hush descended, and we waited. And then the library door suddenly burst open all by itself, and the candle blew out and the door shut again. For a split second, there was pandemonium. You see, the board had worked.
Yeah.
The wine glass had worked, except that it hadn't.
Yeah.
You'll never guess what happened, Father Simon. Well, I happen to know and can confess to you now that the person behind the door was my brother, and all the rest was me. You don't say. You mean it's not the spirit of Sir Reginald from the 16th century. Anyway, clearly I need forgiveness, not from Cream Buns, whose experiment was ruined, but he was a good sport, but mainly from Sir Reginald, the spirit, who, having been summoned, we never got to converse with properly, so was hanging around in limbo and might still be there. This is not, Father Simon, how you behave with the undead.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, this is quite an interest. Not normally, it's, you know, I apologise to my mother, you know, for all this kind of stuff, but now we're apologising to the undead for behaving in an unseemly way. Well, Sister Susie, Heavenly Connections, what do you say?
If it didn't work, how does he have to apologise to it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Sir Reginald, I thought, was very, very funny. And Grabber and Gob, I just think, it did no harm. It was just a silly, you know, I think it's fine. I think it's just a little game that you
Grabber
plays.
Junior, Grabber Senior, Gob and Cream Buns. This could only be a boarding school in the 1960s.
Exactly. But I'm going to forgive you, just because I don't think it was that bad. No one got hurt. It wasn't malicious. So therefore, you're forgiven.
It's looking good. Brother Matthew.
So, yes, Cream Buns, cloisters and clock towers. Very much like all our school days. I think we can all agree on that. How did Cream Buns manage to get a teaching role? This is supposed to be a 17th century sailing
captain. Classics, fluent in Latin and Greek.
And he only learns Greek, and he's called Sir Reginald. At what point, Cream Buns, did you start raising your eyebrow? if we're going to be forgiving the... I'm going to say the undead have got other things on their mind. Just, you know, I'm no expert on the undead. But I'm going to guess they've got other things, other fish to fry. So I'm going to say forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
So that was our Confession from the Crypt, successfully converted from a VHS that we dug out from the attic and turned into a lovely WAV format. Grabber's Confession with the hilarious title, Spooky Loopy Nuts Are We.
Oh, there's a reference back to, yes.
Have you ever played...
That's a classic Batline. There's a reference to, yes.
Snooker Loopy.
It's Chaz and Dave.
That's big break team.
So yeah. I think just that I don't think we've had any Ouija board confessions since then. And I think it's possible to do them with a kind of a sneery tone and a raised eyebrow. Because obviously, it's a silly thing. I mean, there's someone moving things around.
Yes, have you ever played with a Ouija board? I'm just asking. Have you?
No, never. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Why would you waste your time?
I remember Martin Kemp telling me he had with Billy Idol once.
Martin Kemp and Billy Idol.
Yeah. Okay.
Who are they addressing?
Who are they trying to read?
What message could they get?
The curtain moved by itself. He said, he swears.
The curtain moved. I love it.
Yeah.
How are we going to tell them that there's life after death? I know. Let's just move the curtain a bit and they'll get the idea.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
No.
We're getting this message, it says, it's a nice day for a packed wedding. Oh, I'm going to have that. That's a good line.
Yeah, that one.
Anyway, if you have a request for a confession you'd like to hear again, or indeed, you have a confession that you'd like to pass on to us, send it to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. If we use it, you get a smart speaker. Over to Brother Matt for this week's secret code phrase.
And the code phrase this week is fiddling about with the pans. Fiddling about with the pans.
If you've listened this far, and clearly if you haven't, then you're not going to hear this bit anyway.
No.
You can tweet me at Simon Mayo. That's it on X and Twitter. If you go on Threads, it's at Mr. Simon Mayo. And if you're on Blue Sky, I'm just at Simon Mayo. And I'm just there for everybody.
Just for everyone. Yes. All of them on the Blue Sky.
Telling everybody about the return of the Confessions podcast. Thank you very much indeed. You can follow, like, and subscribe, and you can send money to Holly.
Yes.
No, please don't.
Fiver in the post. Thank you very much.
No.
Until next time, Sister Holly says...
In a while, crocodile.
From the gutter, Brother Matt.
Bye.
And thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Whoa,
camouflage.